Hello, everyone. It's Scott Carley here in Seattle.
Martha Shaw here from on Martha's Vineyard.
Hi, Martha.
Hi.
Your vineyard, eh? That's very good.
Yep.
Yeah, just taking over. And I know Jay is here, too, I hope. Anyone else joined us yet? A quiet crowd today. So can everyone just sort of chime in so we know who's here?
This is Martha.
It's still Martha there, good. And is Jay back on?
No, this is Britt, hi.
Oh, hi, Britt.
Hi.
Hi. I guess I got bumped out there for a moment.
Okay, good. I'm glad you got back. Yeah, I did. I put in the codes for doing the recording. It may have taken a moment. So right now I have Jay, Martha, and Britt, and I'm Scott. Just the four of us today so far. Well, let's just do what we usually do, and that's have a few moments to talk a little bit about what's going on for each of us. And since there's so few of us, I guess each of us can have a chance to talk a little bit about what we're up to. So that would be great. Who wants to start?
Jay, I guess I'll probably start.
That's great.
University of Wisconsin Extension. As a reminder, I'm in Shawano County, which is west of Green Bay. As far as climate change education matters go, I'm on the outreach committee for WIKI, Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts, and we're working on an outreach plan. We're also planning a conference for local government folks and planners on climate change adaptation that will be taking place in September. I guess it's one of three conferences. Ours is going to be in Green Bay. I guess it's one somewhere else in the Great Lakes, and then there's one in Duluth Superior. And also I do a couple training workshops. One of them is it's called Rapid Climate Change Strategy for Business. I offer local businesses that either are somewhere in the supply chain for Walmart or want to develop are in the process of developing relationships with customers or suppliers out on the west coast of the United States or outside of the United States. And also on our local sustainability team and extension, we do a variety of educational programs in that.
You're busy.
I'm also in NESL, National Network Sustainable Living Education, and one of the recent publications that I worked on with others in that group was Climate Change Guide for Citizens. That is about a 32-page pager booklet. It's also available online, and it's geared towards some basic understanding for a little bit of the science, but more in the question of, you know, adaptation and mitigation for citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm up to, I guess.
Well, that's a lot.
That's interesting to me. This is Martha, because I'm pulling together these businesses for the United Nations Earth Summit in Rio. So it'd be fun to talk offline about that.
Sure. Yeah, these are just little businesses. Like, you know, you go almost anywhere, any county in the United States, and chances are there's going to be somebody that's in the supply chain, for instance, for Walmart, and since they have that sustainability initiative going on, and the first four questions on the checklist have to do with climate change. And So if you got a business on even the local level where I operate that is in a supply chain for like a large manufacturer or a large, you know, food supplier, God knows what, eventually, they're already starting to hear, oh, what are these questions about I have to answer? What's the climate disclosure project? So I kind of try to offer the businesses and the citizens in the area where I serve kind of a heads up so the question won't come as a total surprise in the future. You know what I mean?
How are you finding, Jay, how are you finding people react to that? I mean, obviously they're sort of first seeing these questions and wondering what do we do about them. Are you getting a lot of pushback in terms of having to answer them?
No.
People are actually quite...
I'm not.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, but the reason is because it's not because they accept climate change is happening or that there's an anthropogenic causality. It's because Walmart wants to know.
Yes.
And as part of that, I acquaint them with the Carbon Disclosure Project. And the Carbon Disclosure Project, I first used that in the general five-part workshop back around, I don't know, 2007. It was climate change strategy was one of the five workshops I was doing. And they have a very convenient thing you can... At least you used to be able to find on their website, says representing, you know, $45 trillion in investment capital. And frankly, if I'm working with a small business or a medium-sized business, they see that and they really don't give a damn about the science anymore.
Okay. Hey.
I mean, that's not quite, you know, it's not...
No, but their motivation is looking for work and providing goods and services to Walmart.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something they well need to know if they're going, you know, be exporting to our West Coast, I believe. And, of course, if they want to be in the European market, I'm in a rural county, but we do have people that have international businesses.
Yep.
You know, plus, obviously, the Walmart thing. I mean, we got one county down. I did it in another county for another educator, and they had a company that repackages. Basically, all they do is package other people's food into branded packages. It's like all these food companies have the same food, essentially, but it's rebranded and repackaged, and that's their business. And they've actually appointed a person to deal with the whole Carbon Disclosure Project because their major customer is Walmart.
Right.
So anyway, you know, yada, yada. And it's kind of a backdoor approach. But I find, you know, most business people, for the most part, aren't terribly ideological. If somebody with a lot of money wants to know the answer to something, they want to be able to answer it.
Right. Well, it certainly shows the power of a company like Walmart to really change things, not only within its own business, but all of those companies in part of its supply chain. And then I guess on top of that is, as you say, folks exporting to other countries that may well have more stringent regulations than the U.S. does, especially in terms of carbon load. It really shows how that trickles down. And as you say, folks may not have any concerns around this from an ideological perspective, but they just simply from their own bottom line, they say, oh, yeah, okay, we'll do that if that's what you want.
Yeah.
So
psychologically, one of the interesting things about that, though, is as time passes, you know, in the United States, generally, I have found, at least in my life, that people often have respect for people that have more money than they do. Yeah, it's kind of a psychological thing, and it's almost like what happens over time with some of the people I've been working with is they actually start to accept the science simply because somebody with a lot of money does.
Yeah.
And I could not have exposed them to any scientific information or any form of training that would have made a difference otherwise, I don't think.
That's not where their opinion is formed. It's not formed from...
That's very common.
It's kind of, when you think of it, it's kind of a depressing conclusion, you know, since most of the folks who are on this call are interested in education, and it seems like change really only occurs if there's kind of a financial incentive there, or as you say, the sort of prestige, if you wish, that folks who have resources.
Scott, this is Frank.
Hi, Frank. Yeah.
There's another. I think there's a more sophisticated approach to that.
Sure.
And what that is that different people form their opinions from various worldviews or perspectives or the way they think. And if you're inclined to think about the environment as an important thing for lots of reasons, independent of economics, that's going to flavor your opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And your education is going to flavor those opinions. And so I think it's very common for human beings to make decisions based on what other people who you think are well-informed and influential.
Mm-hmm.
And those influencers are different for different people depending on the
mm-hmm.
way they approach the world.
Yeah, I would. This is Jay. I would agree with that totally. There's lots of different ways to approach it.
Yeah, and so if you approach the world principally from a religious, faith-based, and there's no disparaging here, you're going to draw the efficiencies of complicated, decisions from various sources. And there's a lot of decisions that people have to make nowadays. Tons of information they have to sort through. So this idea that Gladwell has about thin slicing. I think it's a natural human thing to thin slice. Making flint this way to make a arrowhead is a faster way. You don't have to go in and reproduce it all. That's hundreds of thousands of years old. I think it's a basic idea that we use all the time. It's just whether or not you respect a
mm-hmm.
source.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is Jay, and I agree with that totally. I've done some work with some of the churches in our county. One in particular asked me, and they were like every year to do a little, presentation program. And they're not a creation care movement church, but they are a very environmentally oriented church. And we have a nature study center, and they have programs for people that are birders and gardeners and stuff like that. And so kind of the citizen science type thing and phenology and the importance of, signing up, if you want to, help contribute ground data, they appeal, they respond to that because that's where they're at and it has nothing to do with economics.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that's a bit more encouraging. maybe I'm in a pessimistic mood these days. In terms of what we're doing,
but Scott, I think the some of the I was talking with somebody earlier today. How many people are on the call today? Just the three of us?
No, I think Rip and Martha are here.
Cool. Sorry, it just seemed
to be
a three-way call. I think this is a long conversation, a long engagement. It's going to be decades of work to really make the changes that are needed and to help people understand that this is not a fringe thing, that that this is solid science and it has real implications, and that the decisions that we have to make are very sizable on all fronts regarding these issues. So it's going to take time to kind of build up the head of steam again that we seem to have lost over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm just trying to say let's try to be a little bit patient in why when you hit the throttle and the steam engine doesn't move.
You don't throw the steam engine away.
Right, exactly. The steam engine works. It just, we lost all the gas that gave us the low motion. Let's build it up again.
Very true. So we were just sort of going around, just getting a little sense of what everyone is up to. Martha, do you have a couple of comments? You sort of chimed in there a little bit of UN real stuff.
Well, I've been migrating a little bit beyond doing the marketing and the small businesses and getting back to being a scientist again. So I'll be keeping you updated on that in the coming months.
Okay, good. Can we maybe ask you to do a presentation maybe in the fall on some of that stuff when it's appropriate?
Yes, I have my act together by then.
Okay, good.
I'm a coastal geologist, and I've been basically promoting green, environmentally low-carbon companies for a long time, and I haven't got a little fatigue from it, and I've been thinking more about, I am a media person, but I've been thinking about getting out of the marketing side more and into the science side, the expression of science.
Good. Anyone else want to jump in? Britt, for example?
Sure. I'm done working at Wellesley, so I'm out of that. And horrible freedom. No, Clinton's reference, sorry. I am working for Turk right now, just going through the collections and doing a reviewing for that, for the review camp that's coming up. And we'll be finishing that up possibly today. And then I need to finish up a couple research projects and get some papers out the door. I'm research affiliated with BU now. So I have sort of a platform to support that, and so I don't have to rely on my own software. And I am in the process of making a decision about if I'm going to go after proposals to continue my science, or if I'm going to go after proposals in science communication. So I have to make a lot of decisions, and I'll be talking with Turk about that, and to some extent, and also trying to figure out what fits best right now. But I have interests in kind of all of the above, so it's hard it's just one of those transition moments. So that's it for me.
You're working with the right crowd. We're all interested in many of those areas. Britt, are you going to be then staying in the Boston area? Because I think at one time you talked about possibly ending up in Oregon.
I really wanted to end up in Oregon. We couldn't make it without Nancy and we ran all the numbers. Okay. My spouse is the major breadwinner.
Yeah.
Even with my fabulous appointment at Wellesley, my spouse is still the major winner. So we had to take that into account. So
yeah.
We are here in Boston.
Great.
Awesome in some ways, but I love Portland. My sister lived there for 50 years and still grew up there. And I just, maybe in 3 years, we actually do have a plan to reconsider in 3 years. And maybe Portland will win then, but I love the West Coast.
I spent quite a bit of time in Portland.
It is. East Coast, Boston's not bad, and we're moving out into the rural, closer, about halfway to Amherst from Boston, so that'll work for me.
Good. So, Frank, any comments on what you're up to and maybe what we should be looking at ourselves?
Well, lots, as usual. So one of the things that I think, thank you, Britt, for doing the work on the collections, and as a lot of people on the call who are working on the clean pathway, we've been working a lot on that. We're working on the AAAS benchmark tagging tool, so taking the tight alignments and the related alignments and building a kind of a gap analysis perspective and a tool for looking at national standards relative to climate literacy and really deepening the scope of what climate literacy is. We've talked about this in the past. Maybe, Scott, I should brief the network on kind of the findings of that in the fall because...
Okay.
One of the interesting facts is when you do the tight alignments of national standards and then you look at the kind of the scope and sequence implications of that, you're coming up with probably about 10% of the national standards, specifically the benchmarks for science literacy, relate to climate literacy. 10%. And that's science, technology, mathematics, K-12. That's a humongous number, and most people would not even come close to that number. They would say it's probably 5 ideas out of 1,100. And so it has very wide implications because there's a lot of related ideas that you could teach clearly and well in a relevancy with climate and climate-related issues. So
actually a way of almost reforming that, almost a different kind of, I hate to use the word theme, but one could teach a whole curriculum, a real perspective on climate, as opposed
exactly.
to our traditional emphasis on STEM.
Well, but the other interesting thing is that I participated in a NRC, panel discussion about. I have it right here. It's this idea. Here it is. So there was this successful K-12 STEM education, Identifying Effective Approaches to Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. And a lot of people are like, well, that's really like 4% of the population, right? I mean, and they make most of the jobs, and I get the approach, but they added this third goal, which is increased STEM literacy, whatever that means, for students, including those who do not pursue STEM-related careers and additional studies in STEM disciplines. And that's and the final part of that was to better prepare citizens to face the challenges of science and technology-driven society.
Yes.
So basically saying everybody who doesn't have a degree in STEM should also be literate in STEM-related issues.
Yes.
So, and, you know, we've all been waiting for, well, where is STEM going to focus on the rest of us?
Yeah.
And the stuff that we do for non-STEM majors, we want them too. We want STEM majors to be climate literate as well, but also we want the rest of society because of the citizenry aspect of it.
Right.
So anyway, but that they're now beginning to broaden that to much more in the core of what science literacy and related literacies was all about originally. So there's some good news in the broadening of,
well,
of what...
What's the status of that, Frank? Is that a report that's coming out?
Yeah, it's out. It's out right now.
Okay.
Wow, I am so glad to hear that. I have huge energy around the non-science majors or the non-technology majors being... trained, in a sense, to understand the world around them. So just the way we all need cultural touchstones, we need science-literate, climate-literate touchstones as well. So,
right.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just going to send this out to you guys all right now. It's just a short digest of this little section. And emphasizing the pieces that, I mean, I think as we work in policies and education, which I spend a lot of time in, you know, understanding the president's priority and the executive branch's priority and even Congress's priority on STEM, we need to make sure that this hook into the rest of us is and the work that we're doing is actually integral, not a distraction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's one thing.
So what do you think? Do they announce any new grant opportunities in this to support this?
No. I mean, you know, the other thing I guess everybody should know is that our funding prospects are abysmal these days.
Yeah.
I know. I'm wondering how they can add on let's broaden it, but we're still not going to give you any money.
Well, I mean, but it's right. It's going to be very hard. I think... for the sustainability of the initiatives that have been pushed up and really given a lot of platform over the past couple of years, you know, the initiatives are going to kind of tail down if we're not careful over the next couple of years. And that's, you know, we're going to make everything we can as robust as we can over the next, you know, while everything's finishing out. Hopefully new initiatives. I mean, I think CSEP2 is still planning on moving forward out of NSF. And NOAA's environmental literacy programs are, you know, took a hit this year because of the CR, but, you know, we hope to have FY12 and then, you know, obviously the NASA work and IMLS and others. So,
Frank, I just wanted to ask about the NOAA environmental lit. It's kind of like we've shifted a year.
Yeah.
Is that kind of the short form of it?
The short version is that basically we're going to take the rank order from the FY11 solicitation and hold over the ones that are competitive for funding.
Yes.
And that put them in a holding pattern.
Right.
For the next year. And if we have funds, if Congress makes that decision to give us funds, then we'll fund them out of that solicitation. And then in FY13 would be the first new solicitation, unless Congress gives us extra money, which doesn't look promising.
Year. And nothing will be funded this year. No
right.
Funds.
There's, I mean, the only thing that looks like we're going to be able to do this year, I think this is, you know, not people don't know, is that a lot of these programs have, if it's a three-year award, you don't pay all of the award in the first year, so you have some mortgages.
Yeah.
So when you see these numbers coming out of Congress, it's not just like all that money goes to new grants. Some of it has to go to existing grants. So you know, there's some of that's going on in here.
Right.
And that's a common federal grant thing all across the board, just to help you understand what these numbers all mean. But these are not good years.
No.
So looking for other revenue streams or other ways of moving forward is I would highly recommend.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
Well, like they exist.
something we ought to also collectively be talking about, too, is just making sure that we're, you know, as you said, the quality of the work we're all engaged in right now needs to be high to encourage continued funding, but we also need to be identifying other sources of funds to, you know, continue our projects.
And the one other thing I'll say, sorry to be talking so long, is we're trying to finalize the Spanish version of the climate literacy document, and we're very close on the majority of it, but we're having a little bit of a hard time with the word literacy.
Yes.
And there's a, it turns out that there's two words, and I'm not even going to try and say them. One is alfabetización, something like that, which has to do basically your ability to use letters.
Yes.
And then there's cultura.
Yes.
And there's some debate in the ocean and climate literacy communities is which one to use. And turns out that one seems to be a little bit patronizing, the other one seems to be a bit off scope, and so we're trying to figure out how to solve this problem together,
yeah.
Ocean and climate.
Yeah, I think, Frank, you were talking with Peter Tutnam of the College of Exploration,
yep.
I think, because
yep.
That's been an issue for us, and actually one of the environmental literacy programs that we have in South Florida.
Yep.
And just trying to find, I think it's really great that several of these geoscience literacies are talking to each other so that we, if we're going to do a translation, especially a word as important as literacy, that at least it's common across all the sort of Spanish translations.
Right,
but it's,
right.
It's, I think it's really interesting, and it would be wonderful to maybe engage some folks who sort of do the work that we do, but do it in Spanish, and I can think of a few people myself.
Yep.
And just talk about what the cultural difference there is. I guess it's fair to say that we've appropriated the word, you know, the climate and the ocean literacy folks have appropriated the word literacy and use it in a slightly different way than it would normally have been used in English. But it would be interesting to talk about what that change also means in Spanish, too. Is why is this so difficult to translate? And I think kind of fascinated by that part of it too.
You know, but Scott, that issue doesn't reside only in other languages. That issue resides in the English too, because there are people who say science literacy, which is where we got it from,
yes.
Or environmental literacy,
right.
is some people still hold that as a very odd use of the term.
Yes.
Because we're adding a new definition to the word literacy.
Clearly we are.
We do not mean that you're able to read text.
Right.
That has to do with the ocean. That's
yes.
We've expanded the definition and modified it. And so, I mean, even people at the National Academies take issue with science literacy.
Yes.
And I'm
yeah.
like, come on, guys, let's not pick that battle.
that one's not worth fighting. I
yeah.
think we understand the intention here.
Yeah, let's get into the, we can get into the nuances and understand
yeah.
there are multiple versions of what one word means.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, I'm curious whether there's been Spanish-speaking countries that have looked at this.
Yeah, well, that's what I've heard, and the God, if anybody speaks Spanish, please
yeah.
understand. I mean no disrespect to the language, but the alfabetización, whatever, you know. And my wife's a Spanish teacher, which makes it even more appalling. seems to be the word that people use in Colombia and Costa Rica and Honduras
okay.
and Peru. And it's a new idea in Spanish-speaking Latin American countries
right.
to have this idea of environmental literacy and use that term that way. But
right.
it seems
yeah.
to be showing up in Pepe from the North American Association for Environmental Education supports that word as opposed to cultura.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll see.
Did you, one of my students referred to it as facility in it. Because there are several words in Spanish that basically mean to have a faculty or a facility to use something with ease.
Hmm.
And I wonder if one of those has an overlapping definition. I'm actually trying to remember what she said. You're Colombian.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting notion.
Well, I'm sure you've asked our Puerto Rican colleagues. And
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember
when this all went out to please anybody who speaks Spanish, vote.
I mean,
may I interject?
Sure, please.
This is Laura Keisler from ATEC in Iowa. I used to work in Illinois, and we started the whole information literacy movement, and
right.
we did eventually move to the word facilitation. You know, to get people to actually be able to use it, not just understand it.
Uh-huh.
That might be a better way to go.
Yeah.
Do you remember which particular word of the the Spanish word?
No, I'm not very good with Spanish, but I remember
but
we
the
did.
Facilitation.
Yeah.
Yeah. To actually have a facility with the information,
right.
Be able to use it. Yeah.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think that gets at the sort of idea that I think most of us have in our heads around, ocean or climate literacy. It's a facility with those ideas. And that gets at that notion of action, too. So it's not just simply an understanding, it's also acting on it. Again, some
exactly.
of our,
right.
the other elements of literacy that we put into the brochures and all.
I think the thing I'm looking for is if the communities in these countries have mm-hmm. gravitated towards one of these three or whichever,
yes.
Let's use the one that the majority of the community are using now, since it's a fairly new concept for
definitely.
You know, whatever word that is, whatever issues we have with any one of them, kind of is secondary to what word is actually used.
And usage.
And I don't know the answer to that yet. It seems to be gravitating towards the alphabeticity.
Yeah, it's surprising though. That's going with the literal rather than the concepts.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, my student hasn't been in Columbia since her high school, and she's in graduate school now. But, I'll ask her, just in case she remembers.
That'd be helpful. And the one other thing, just so you guys know, is that we're trying to, I lost it. Have we talked about the just reminded everybody that the climate literacy sessions at AGU, that's another thing we're spending a bunch of time on. Is getting ready for that.
Yeah.
All seven of them.
There are, I think, what the abstracts for those sessions are due on the 4th, I think, of August.
That's correct.
Very quickly.
It's a month earlier than normal.
Yes.
Well, shoot.
So, just so you guys know.
That's a great opportunity. It's I expect most of us go to that meeting. It's a huge meeting. I think it's upwards of 19,000, I think, last December in San Francisco.
But one of the key things, Scott, to for the people on the call who don't normally go to AGU is that it's been, on the climate communications education side, this has been booming for years, and it's really it's one of the major meetings where this kinds of conversations happen, where the networks are built, where the long dinner or evening networking meetings happen. You know, it's just kind of the way that goes.
Yeah,
so.
Even this network has certainly used it as an opportunity to get together because we don't see each other that often during the year.
Exactly.
And that becomes a major chance for many of us to either meet for the first time or at least reacquaint ourselves with each other. So we've certainly done that over the last couple of years. And this is, I think, to move to something like 7 sessions, that's a major increase. We've usually had maybe 1 or 2, but you're absolutely right, Frank. This is just becoming a major theme in AGU.
And one of the ways to help that stay 7 and not drop to 2 is to having a large pool of abstracts. I mean, this is not a sales pitch. It's just, it is what it is. But if we have a lot of sessions, they'll be more inclined to kind of keep it at the 4, 5, 6, 7 level as opposed to let's just collapse these down to 2.
That's right. Exactly. So that's another argument, is to make sure that we get our abstracts in. So I know I have a couple that I have been considering. Got to get on to it.
All right. There's other stuff, but I think that's good for now.
No, that's great. Any other sort of comments, questions, whatever? Our summer meetings usually are a bit shorter than our ones during the fall and winter. And all I can say is that Tamara's asked me to put together sort of the program, the presentation. So I'll be asking folks over the next 2 months or so to sort of commit to doing some presentations in the fall, and we'll try to develop a schedule. I think that our goal is to have maybe 2 presentations a month, which are a little bit more formal than these kind of informal sessions that we have during the summer and sort of the off time. So we've got a little bit of time to talk informally, and then we also have an opportunity to focus on a particular issue or topic. So if you have any ideas, please fire them off, and love to have folks talk or even suggestions for folks we could invite. Certainly my intention is to ask more folks who are involved in some of the other climate change education projects. We have because the Clean Pathway Project sort of grew out of this network, it gets a lot of attention, and many of us are involved in it. But it would be great to hear what other folks are doing, too, around the country.
You know, Scott, one other piece of that segue, and I completely agree with you, is that the clean pathway is also a way to take these over 100, maybe even as high as 200 active projects and kind of syndicate their work.
Yes.
And put some navigational context and support around what they're doing so that everybody, I mean, ultimately the work stays at each project's location, but, you know, extending it and exposing it and trying to get more access to more work. And really that's the wonderful work that's being done on the gap analysis.
Yes.
So there are really some interesting ideas that are woefully underdeveloped out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's this much work, trying to coordinate that is, I think, some really good work that the network could help with.
Yeah. I think I know those of us who are involved right now at Clean Pathway, we're really focused on the review camp, which comes up the beginning of August. But I think after that, I think it's going to be really important for what will be our third year to really look at all those other kinds of projects. I know, since I've been reviewing a lot of stuff in the last couple of weeks, there's a lot of new material out there. We literally have been putting material in that just got put up on the net the end of May, and there's actually quite a bit of stuff that literally is in the last 2 or 3 months, and those are already in the review process and will end up on the database for the Clean Pathway. So lots of stuff happening there, and I think focusing on what the gap is going to be really encouraging. I know, Frank, you've been really interested in how do we then help folks who are putting proposals together to say, oh, there's an area of deficiency. Let me focus our team on those areas of deficiency. So
right.
We need to really promote where we're seeing problems in the coverage of the climate literacy principles.
Right. Because it opens up the door to really focus and go in depth and really, because you know you don't have to go wide because somebody else has done a very good job on something that's related. I remember working on projects where you kind of you focus on one and then you build all these supplementary sort of well developed, but one was really well developed and it allows you kind of to you know rely on other people. You know?
Yeah. Good. So any other comments today? If not, we'll call it a day, and we'll reconvene next week. I think we'll probably hear from Tamara and possibly Mark on what's happened at the ESIP Foundation, or what's the F stand? Federation, meeting in New Mexico this week. So I'm sure we'll hear a bit of a report back on all of that. So hopefully everyone can join us and others too. So have a great week and keep working on all this stuff.
Great, thanks.
Great, thanks everyone.
Thanks, Scott.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye.